Chapter 44. By the time I got home, I didn't feel like talking with anyone, not even Miss Anne, and the cold and windy day was dismal. My mind was busy with what I'd read at the library and the whole business of the deaths of three women associated with the Carver estate. So, because work is often an antidote to worry, or at least it keeps my hands busy as well as my mind, I grabbed a dust cloth and began polishing furniture. I rubbed my lovely old piano until the wood gleamed. The piano had been left in one of the houses Daisy was selling. Instead of letting it go with the house and dealing with the possibility that the new owners might not want it, she gave it to me. Sitting down on the bench, I ran my hands over the keys, but all I could think of were sad songs of the 1950s, and I didn't need sad. The March wind, howling around the corner of the house, did nothing to lighten my mood. I couldn't get the image of Charles Carver out of my mind. What had happened to him? Where had he gone when he disappeared? Did his wife and daughter join him? Where had he lived? Assuredly, the wife would be dead by now, but surely the daughter was alive somewhere. Did I dare try to contact her, or should I just let well enough alone? It seemed that being connected in any way to the Carver family was dangerous. Could a curse actually hang over the estate? Did I believe in such things? My dust cloth and I headed for the bookcase, and then, with it dust-free and shiny, I turned to the small table beside my front door. This table held the bonsai tree, the plant that had once belonged to Miss Evangeline and came to me by way of jewels. I picked up the bonsai to move it while I dusted, and it was at that moment Penny had one of her spells. Now, Penny is usually a docile cat, easy to get along with, loves to nap, but occasionally something, maybe just the joy of life or the dormant genes of her wild ancestors, emerges to overcome any inhibitions. She runs. No, not just runs. She tears out. She jumps and climbs, streaking through the house like her sanity has vanished. The vet says she's in perfect health, and this is just her way of letting off steam. And that's what she took in her mind to do today. Her erratic flight led her to the front room. Sounding like a herd of elephants, she leaped for the table, bumped into me, and knocked the bonsai tree from my hands. The pot fell to the floor, breaking into two pieces and scattering plant and dirt across the boards. "Penny," I yelled, "stop that!" Fearing what she would demolish next, I trotted to the family room. My cat lay on her rug in front of the fireplace, eyes closed, paws curling and uncurling, the picture of domesticity. "Penny," I said, standing over her, "you're a naughty cat. Do you realize you've just broken a flower pot and made a mess for me to clean up?" She didn't open her eyes and ignored me. Shaking my head, I returned to the front room. I would never understand the mind of a cat. Such a shame that the bonsai plant had been an innocent victim. I bent to retrieve the small tree, which would need another container. Gingerly picking it up, I looked it over. It appeared unharmed, except the roots were all knotted into a hard bunch. This was caused by years of neglect, probably, not by the fall to the floor. The root system looked as if it hadn't been disturbed for quite some time. I didn't know much about bonsai, but I had heard that their roots should be trimmed periodically. The actual tree looked as if the top had been trimmed, but the tree didn't seem healthy. Perhaps Miss Evangeline didn't know how to properly care for it. Gently, I shook away the excess dirt. I had thought the roots were just tangled in a knot, but that wasn't the case. They had grown around an object, a small, oblong box of some sort. Carefully working the box loose without damaging the roots took several minutes, but at last a rusty metal container lay in my hand, separated from Miss Evangeline's plant. How odd! I'd never heard of anything being buried beneath a plant. Well, maybe things like that happened during the Civil War, I dimly recalled the story of an ancestor who had stuck her diamond ring into a pot of ferns when threatened by invading northern soldiers. So if someone wanted to make sure it wasn't found, he might put it under a slow-glowing bonsai. My curiosity whetted, I took plant and box into the kitchen. I found a large bowl to temporarily house the bonsai. Carrying the bowl with me, I returned to the front room and scooped up enough of the loose dirt from the floor to pack around the roots and keep them from drying out. I put the bowl and plant on the table and hurried back to that fascinating box. The lid of the box was rusted to the extent that it was hard to distinguish it from the rest of the box. Carrying the box with me, I traipsed to the utility room, rummaged in a drawer, and came up with a screwdriver. I ran this around the rim of the box, working it under the lid. By twisting the screwdriver, I was able to lever the lid upward. Rust flakes dropped into my hand as the lid came off and fell to the floor. I scooped up the lid and carried it and the box back to the dining room. Placing the box on the table, I stirred the contents with one finger. A crumpled and torn plastic wrapping lay there. It came apart in my fingers as I picked it up. Within these scraps of plastic lay an old-fashioned pocket watch. I gently lifted the watch from its tattered nest and held it under the ceiling light. The soft sheen of rose gold seemed to glow in my hand. The glass over the face of the watch was broken and cloudy, but pinpoints of light glimmered from the golden rim. The largest diamond I had ever seen twinkled from the top of the watch face where the numeral 12 should have been. This was an expensive piece of jewelry. What under the sun was it doing beneath a bonsai tree? And why did it have an ugly hole right through the center? A hole that went all the way through, from front to back. The hole would have rendered it useless as a timepiece, but its apparent worth wouldn't have decreased much, because gold and jewels didn't lose their value with time. Too stunned to move, I sat staring at it, trying to make sense of why anyone would have buried such an expensive item under dirt and left it there for years. Carefully, I turned the watch over. The back of it, which also looked to be gold, was untarnished and bright. Carefully engraved there and partially obliterated by the hole were the initials CC. How long did I sit, too stunned to move? Maybe it was because I had just come from the library where I had read about the disappearance of Charles Carver, or maybe it was because the plant had belonged to Miss Evangeline. But I immediately thought of the missing Carver heir. Had the watch belonged to him? Shaking my head, I reached for my cell phone. "This is too much for me to deal with," I told Ulysses, who lay under the table at my feet. "Cade can have this watch and decide what to do with it and what significance it has. I can't wait to be rid of it." The truth was, for whatever reason the watch had been buried, the fact that somebody had seen fit to hide it away was ominous. It gave me an uneasy feeling. I wanted nothing to do with it.